Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Mariana Kay, an experienced content marketer that works with massive software as a service brands like Zapier, Aweber, and Pipedrive, to name just a few. Originally from Croatia, where she grew up and studied journalism all the way through to finishing her master's degree, Mariana moved to Dublin, Ireland with her then boyfriend and now husband. She spent her first year in this brand new country working in customer support and picking up the phone to cold call for a print-based classified publication. It was at this point when she realized the sales wasn't going to be the most fulfilling career path for her that she began taking on her first freelance writing jobs. After a couple of years of finessing her approach, sharpening her strengths, and learning more about the types of companies she wanted to work with, Mariana eventually narrowed her focus as a B2B content writer for SaaS companies. And the rest is history. In this episode, Mariana and I talk about why she and her husband made the decision to leave their hometowns and move to Dublin, where they've both been able to land higher-paying jobs working with tech companies. We dig into her approach to landing great new freelance clients, including the ways she sets her rates, how she engineers word-of-mouth referrals, and the ways her website generates leads today. We explore Mariana's process for creating long-form content that ranks well in organic search, including keyword research, brainstorming the right topic angles, and how she structures her blog content, and more. As always, you can find everything we mention in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Mariana Kay. Mariana, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this is great. I'm excited to chat. And as listeners will already know, I love getting to talk about all things content marketing. So when I get to do this with someone who's super talented in the industry, it's like a dream come true.
And you are talking about content marketing is a dream come true for me as well.
I like it. So for everyone listening, Mariana has worked with companies, SaaS brands in particular, like Zapier, Pipedrive, and Aweber, just to name a few. Huge names in the industry. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of all this, let's start at the beginning. Where are you originally from?
I am originally from Croatia. It is a small-ish country in the kind of middle to East Europe. Not really sure, you know, people like to classify it as different things. But pretty much Eastern Europe is what most people would know, kind of identify it as. I've been living in Ireland, though, for the last 4.5, almost 5 years. And I'm here pretty much, you know, now and for the foreseeable future. So I live in Dublin, Ireland, and you will probably hear it in my accent as well. I am not a native English speaker, but I speak a little bit like an Irish person. So I have a really
fascinating blend of...
Yeah, people tell me I sound like a mix of a Canadian and an Irish person, which I am neither. So really fun conversation always.
So what brought you to Dublin? Why'd you move?
So my husband works in software development, and we originally came here just for 6 months because he got an internship with Microsoft, and it kind of just went from there. We both liked it in Ireland. He wanted a different company to work in, so he ended up working in a different company, which he's been with for the past 4 years. But it was never supposed to be this long. It just kind of worked out. We really liked it. And yeah, that's why we're here. It was kind of just by accident. We were both at the very end of our college degrees. We were both in master's, so back in Croatia. So we kind of just made it work so that we can kind of, you know, be writing our thesis from here, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's pretty much how it worked out.
Yeah. I mean, hey, happy accidents are the way that lots of things in life end up happening.
Absolutely.
I like it. All right. So, you know, you mentioned studying for your master's. Can you take us back to, you know, who Mariana was as you were growing up? What were you interested in? You know, what did you see yourself wanting to do? And why did you kind of choose that, at least school path for yourself?
Absolutely. It actually all kind of makes sense once you look back at that whole entire period, which is at this point a decade. I started college when I was 18 and 2009. And I studied journalism. I went to bachelor's and master's for journalism, specialized in TV journalism, and have pretty much always wanted to be a journalist. Literally when I was, you know, 10 years old or something, I was into languages. Mm-hmm. I dabbled into, you know, I studied English since, you know, we do it in school since at the time it's like fourth grade, but now kids do it from the first grade. Anyway, I learned English and Italian and I dabbled in French and I was into this whole like language thing and creative thing. So I pretty much was sure that I want to be a journalist. So I ended up in journalism college and spent 5 years there. In 2014, which was about 5 years in, I was supposed to graduate at this point, but I went for a student exchange semester in Poland, which is where I also had some extra work in journalism and studying in journalism. And at that point, I really didn't know what I'm going to do because even though I still wanted to be a journalist, I also was very unsure of how that's going to work out. Journalism is pretty low paid for an initial period of career. There was not many jobs going around. Because I was between Poland and Croatia for a semester, I wasn't really sure, you know, how to go about looking for jobs in Croatia. And that's exactly when my then boyfriend and now husband got an opportunity to go to Dublin to Microsoft for half a year. At which point I was like, you know, let's just do it and I'll just figure it out as I go. So at this point, I still am not a journalist in like as a job, but I'm graduating journalism and I have no idea what to do. So because we were supposed to be in Dublin for just half a year, I thought, you know, I'm just going to get whatever job comes my way. And in my case, it was work in telecommunication sales. One of them was retail. The other one was in a call center. And I was like, you know, I'm just like making some money until something better comes along. And then summer of...
Well, you can learn a lot by having a cold calling job.
For sure. You know what? Looking back, it's like I was in...
It's almost a common theme with like a lot of successful entrepreneurs I've been able to chat with.
For sure. And marketers and business owners. Yeah, for sure. And at the time, I really was wondering, what the hell am I doing? Whereas now I'm looking back and I'm thinking to myself, wow, I actually learned a lot. And also, if I had this... knowledge then that I have now, I would have been a better salesperson as well, which is crazy to think of. But basically what happened was I wasn't really happy in either of these jobs. Obviously it was just to, you know, to pay the bills. And then once we decided to stay in Dublin for a while, summer of 2015 came around and I got this B2B sales job that was literally cold calling like companies in Dublin and in Ireland on this e-commerce platform-ish kind of thing. And I really didn't like it, but I was sitting next to a marketing team, which was the first time I ever had an experience just listening to those people. And I kept hearing about this like organic traffic and Google Analytics and ranking updates and changes. And I was like, what the hell are they talking about? But I was really, really intrigued because at this point I was bored. I was like, the job wasn't great. There was a lot of research work in it and a lot of talking to random people who just kind of like don't want to talk to you on the phone and, you know, send you places. And it was kind of like, okay, this is interesting. I'm going to listen to them. So out of curiosity, literally pure curiosity, I would come home and research all of these things that the marketing team was talking about. And I had no idea, why does that make any sense? How will this have any impact on my career? Funny enough, it did. And I started, you know, going through all the free education that I could, you know, the stuff that everyone goes through, HubSpot, Google certifications, lynda.com, Skillshare, like anything you can think of. I was just devouring it.
And I love that this came out of an area of personal interest too, right?
Like literally.
You were super motivated to learn more about.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. I wonder what that is. And I would go home and just like Google it. And after a while, what happened was I came across content marketing. Literally, I'm not even joking. 2015, that's not that long ago. You know what I mean? But at the time, it was already a thing. But because I was never into marketing, and it's so funny to say that now, I wasn't into marketing. I wasn't into business in, you know, in the years leading up to that. And even in college, we had a like new media class that I didn't take. Like it was one of the optional ones. And I didn't take it because it just kind of like didn't care about Twitter or anything. Sure. It's so funny to think about that. And I wasn't into any of that. And then now it's like fall of 2015 and I'm listening about all of these things and I'm like, how was this so interesting? How did I never care about this? And what ended up happening was I realized that what this whole like content marketing is about is someone being a really good writer, talking to, you know, the person on the other side who's looking for an answer to a question. And I was like, ooh, this is maybe something that I can and do. I don't know if it's a career thing, but why not? And yeah, I was like, oh, journalism background comes in handy for this. So that's kind of how I got to the point of like, oh, marketing is a thing that I could get into. At fall of 2015, I lost a sales job. I ended up getting a first freelance job, which was never, ever intended on my part to happen. But so let me set the scene. I'm jobless, right? I don't have a job. My husband is the one working and we're, you know, we're getting through, but I want a job, right? I want to have a career. I want to do something. So I'm jobless. And there was a point in which he says something like, I think one of the reasons why you're so unsure of what to do and where to go is you're not really connected with professionals. Like you don't have a network of people that you would go to for stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I think I might then like start, you know, volunteering maybe at events and going to events and doing that kind of stuff. So what I did was I went to Web Summit, which in Europe, I don't know how it's elsewhere, but in Europe, it's considered like this huge big tech event where, you know, tens of thousands of people go. And it was in Dublin at the time. I went there, volunteered there, and ended up meeting a company from back home-ish, like from the region where I'm from. And they are developers for, you know, they develop e-commerce solutions for their clients. And we met because we speak the same language and, you know, in the middle of Dublin. And we are just like chatting away. And at some point, like, you know, 2 days later, one of them goes, hey, I saw on Twitter that you have a degree in journalism. Would you consider writing about e-commerce for us? Literally out of nowhere. And this is like right? Like what were the chances? And this comes just because, I mean, this comes right at the time when I'm like a couple of months in learning about content marketing and just digital marketing in general. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I'll figure it out. And I did that for actually about half a year, I think, from that point onwards.
I think it's important to really like highlight to everyone listening that you set yourself up for this opportunity to make sense when it made sense for you, because you were already learning on your own about content marketing. And then you went out of your way to go to this big industry event, right? So it's not total happenstance. Like you set yourself up for this to happen.
Yeah, like when I think about it, it's kind of serendipitous. But at the same time, when you look at the events that led up to that, yeah, it was bound to happen probably at some point. If not right then and there, it was bound to happen at some point. So what happened from that?
I mean, luck.
For sure. What happened from that point on was I actually proactively started looking for a job in content marketing. But the problem was I had no freaking experience other than, you know, just had this one freelance job or this one company that I did freelance jobs for. And I ended up interviewing for a company who needed a B2B content executive or a content whatever associate. I don't know how they called it. Doesn't matter. And I didn't get the job because of the lack of experience. But they ended up offering me a different job, which is basically product development. And the company does online courses in digital marketing. So my job would be basically a project manager behind the courses. So working with experts like, you know, VP of marketing, big agency owners and experts, you know, people like the big speakers you would see on various stages in conferences and things, and basically working with them to develop educational content for online students who then purchase these very long courses. These are like 30, 40 hours of like all together courses. Yeah. So I ended up doing that for a year and a half. That was my very last in-house job. And it was a place where I learned a whole lot. And at some point during that time, like a year in, I realized that even though I'm learning from all of these really smart people, from these marketers and business owners, and really, really cool experts, I was not developing myself as a marketer. I was still just, you know, a project manager and a product developer. Mm-hmm. So I ended up starting to kind of reach out to opportunities like freelance job postings and companies that I think would be cool to work for or work with. And
how did you do some of that outreach? Because I think this is a position that a lot of our listeners are in today who are, you know, relatively early on in their freelance career. Are you looking at, you know, if you're looking at marketplace sites or job boards, which ones specifically, I guess?
That's a good question because it's been a while since I opened them, but I think it was their likes of ProBlogger and a few others, but like there were just really a few. I think I found my first ever job on ProBlogger. I'm pretty sure. I cannot say 100% because as I said, it's been probably over a year at this point that I opened any of them. So I don't even remember all of the ones that I looked at, but it was literally one job that I found on one of those places. And then a job where someone found a thing that I wrote for a conference here in Dublin that said like, hey, I want your talent. Like, how do I hire you? And basically those two clients pushed me over the line of having basically replacing my salary from the company that I worked for at the time and being able to just say, hey, this is not working for me anymore. I want to leave. I had like a 4 weeks notice as well. So that kind of took a while to just put together. And then I had some just personal issues to deal with. So it was kind of like a mix of things. It took me a few months to kind of work the everything out and be like, okay, now this is my job. Like I'm a freelancer, but that's my job. But it worked out really, really well straight out of the gate. I like literally within a month, I had replaced the income just because I went for only the jobs on the, I think, ProBlogger job board that looked good. Like when someone said, oh, I pay like one cent per word, I said, I'm not doing that. Okay. Like I'm just not. So I kind of like straight out of the gate said, I know that people get very, very underpaid in this industry when they get started. So let's see how I can kind of bypass that if in any way. And I think I kind of did.
So let's actually drill into that a little bit more because I know a lot of early freelancers can identify with that, you know, clients who want to pay you just like pennies on the dollar, you know, $50 blog post, $100 blog post. And not that that isn't a great rate for some people in certain parts of the world, but you know, there's a lot of potential to earn much more also, especially as you build your skills as you've been doing over the years. So
yeah,
you know, looking at comparing what you were doing back then, you know, ProBlogger job boards, other little kind of marketplace sites where you have opportunities, compare that to how you get clients today. What are some of the ways that you're now acquiring, you know, much higher value clients today? What's working best?
So let me start out with this. So I started out by so my two first jobs were, other than the one from Web Summit, my first two jobs were, you know, reaching out to this, to a bunch of jobs, but getting the one, it was a, ironically, a software as a service company, which is my target client today. That was the first one. I didn't really target SaaS at the time. It just happened. I think it was also a very happy serendipitous occasion. And then the other one was a video production agency, but they didn't really identify as just video production. It was a whole kind of like storytelling thing. And I really liked that. They were really deep into their work. They really cared about their clients. So I wrote content for them, not their clients, but literally for them to market their agency. And it was really fun because it was also kind of like talking about marketing, but in a much kind of like bigger picture storytelling kind of way. And that, like, both of those went on for a good few months. And while that was happening, obviously people started seeing my name more. I wasn't really active on Twitter until 2015 or early 2016 or something like that. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of backlog of who I was and what I do and what I care about. So I started tweeting more. I started being more active just in general in, you know, leaving comments on things and tweeting back to people and reaching out to people just randomly to tell them that I really liked something that I've read of theirs. And then I guess what happened was, yeah, people started seeing my name around and started reaching out. So I did get a good bit of...
Because you're building community.
Yeah, and people kind of start, when they see your face and your name together in multiple places, I think they start just kind of building this net of who you are in their head. Maybe not intentionally, but you know, when you show up enough times, it paints a picture in people's heads. So I think that was one of the factors. The other one was what I did pretty early on, I would say maybe 6 months after, maybe not six, but less than a year after I started, after I went out of my full-time job, in-house job to do this full-time, I started trying to figure out what kind of companies really suit me, what sizes of companies really suit me, and also, you know, how does that reflect on how much I can charge? Because obviously, a two-person company is probably going to be able to pay you much less than a 150-people company. But then again, if working with a larger company is a pain in the butt, I don't want to do that. So I kind of like played around with what works for me. And I landed at a conclusion, or this was more like a hypothesis, I guess. I started looking out for companies that are anywhere between like 100 and maybe 300 people of just in employees number. And then who are already on the market for long enough to know what they're doing. I worked with a few startups, and that was a disaster. And that I'm not saying that working
with startups,
that
was a good lesson to learn.
yeah. I'm not saying that is always a disaster, but for me, I found that working with them took a lot more of my mental space and energy out of writing and into trying to figure out what they want and who they're targeting and what they're looking for. And I felt like that's not my place. And because I found myself that I'm really comfortable going really, really deep into, you know, writing about topics that we already know are, or categories of topics that we already know are working really, really well, and we know what level of the audience we are targeting, I was a lot more comfortable with that. So I started looking out for companies that, you know, I can find their funding and or their revenue somewhere on the internet. I can see their number of employees. I can see how long they've been in business. I can see what content they've created in the past. And once I had a feeling that, you know, they have it together, I would reach out to them. And let me tell you this, and this is my favorite tip to, or not tip, but like the favorite part of the story to tell everyone, is once I started reaching out to that very specific category of companies, I don't think it's a category, it's just like this like very narrow filter of companies. I still have a list somewhere. There was about 30 companies on the list. I reached out to maybe half, and I started getting so many responses to those emails that I had to stop emailing people because I couldn't bear with amount of emails. And I'm saying that because I feel like a lot of people go out and say, oh, you have to email 100 companies every day for like 2 weeks, which I think amounts to like 1,000 companies. You have to email all of these companies and all of these people. And, you know, the more you do it, the more it's going to be successful. And I don't believe that's true, because I focused on a very small number of companies and very specific type of companies. And that worked a lot better. I could have gone out and said, I'm going to email every SaaS there is. And, you know, some of them are going to come back. You know, if I send 1,000 emails, I'm going to get whatever, 50 back. But I sent 15 and I got like 10 back because I was so specific about what I was saying. I used only like one or two pieces of my portfolio up to that point because I did have a very small portfolio. But I said, hey, I worked with this SaaS that does this, and I worked with this, you know, video production company that does this, and this is what I've done for them. And this is the result that this post got and this post, and I think I can do the same for you, and why don't we talk? And it was very conversational. It was very personal. It wasn't like fake personalized. You know what I mean when I say fake personalized, right?
High touch. Like, you were doing so much research, and you were, I'm imagining you as you're writing these emails too. You're really like catering it to the individual person you're reaching out to. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it took me days to send, I think it was like two or three days to send just these 15 emails, because I was looking into every single person I was emailing. You know, these people are either content managers or VPs of marketing or CMOs or whatever they are. But like, I knew exactly their role in their company. I knew they have like a team of 10 people or a team of two, everything like that. Like, LinkedIn is a very rich place that tells you exactly, you know, where people are at in their companies. So I looked into that. I looked into a lot of the things that they individually did, you know, the podcasts that they appeared on. Some of them I knew from podcasts even before I decided to reach out to those specific companies. So that helped a lot. And I spent a long time doing that. And after, you know, less than a week, it paid off. And some of those companies, or one of those companies, I still work with. And this process happened over a year ago. I think it was like March of 2018. So, you know, I mean, that goes to show how just how productive that process was, rather than just finding any 500 companies that are in SaaS and just emailing anyone in that company. So I think
that's also been my experience too with our client work. I mean, if you're really thoughtful about it, if you put effort into actually, you know, finding a real person's email address, like researching them, checking out their LinkedIn, their Twitter, like positioning your pitch so that it makes a lot of sense for them, like make it a no-brainer. And then you're going to at least get a reply. I mean, there's always lots of variables, right? Like maybe they don't have budget right now, or maybe they're on a content break or something, right? So some of those things will be out of your control. But I will say, like, you know, even when I started freelancing myself, similar experience, just very treat everyone like real people. Don't do the spray and pray approach.
100%. And I think also because I just went into it with no expectations whatsoever. I was just like, you know what? I care about these companies. I really do. I never reached out to a company that I thought their product was crap or you know, they're doing this like really boring industry or whatever. I just really enjoyed what these companies were already producing because I had a longer list, and then I kind of filtered it down even more because of, you know, the products that are behind the names of that company. So I think just by being the person that is like, hey, I know that you are a busy person, but it wasn't, you know, those emails that start like, hey, Ryan, I know you're super busy, so I'm going to keep this short. Like nobody cares. Like nobody cares about that. Everyone's emails start like that.
It reads like a template.
Yeah. But mine was like, hey, you know, this is who I am and this is what I do. And I know this, this and that about your company, but like super detailed. And I knew that, you know, they had a person who left, who was their content writer, or I knew that they already hired freelancers. So my kind of pitch for most of these companies was, hey, I want to take things off of your plate, not because I desperately need work, but because I know that you have so much to deal with, and I can literally, you don't have to manage me. You don't have to do anything. This is my process. This is how it works. You know, this is how I can help. You're going to gain literal hours every week. And I think that really worked. And I was really gentle with it as well. It wasn't like, hey, I know you're like terrible at your job, and you know, here's what I can do. It was pretty much like, my job as a freelancer is to make your job easier. And you know, if there's any way you think I can contribute to that, please let me know and let's chat. And when people see that you're this just real person behind that email, they love that. And that really works.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's talk content now, because I want to pull some of this wealth of information out of you too for everyone listening.
Let's do it.
You've gotten really good at this over the past, you know, few years, even though it's only been 4 years or so since you've been in the world of content marketing.
Yeah.
But what are some of the principles that you personally follow when it comes to producing long form content that ranks well in organic search?
Okay. Wow. That's a loaded question. So I'm going to try not to ramble. Not creating content for the sake of content has been my like thing that I've been, you know, telling everyone, anyone who's willing to listen to me, because I'm really tired of companies hiring freelancers just so that we have something on the blog, quote unquote, or, you know, just so we can rank. Like, what does that even mean? For me, it is, you know, what role can you play in someone's life with that content? And that sounds really cheesy and also really like overly, like, I don't think I'm that important, but if my piece of content, or like the piece of content I write for a client, if that can make an actual difference in someone's work life, because we are, you know, I'm writing for B2B companies, so their customers and clients are other companies. So how can their content change, impact, save time, do whatever for the person who's going to be reading it? And what I mean by this is, creating content for the sake of content is dumb. You know, creating content for the sake of having something on the blog every week or every day, or God forbid, multiple times a day. I remember when that was a trend. I'm totally against that. So for me, it is, okay, if we are creating this, why are we creating this? And as part of my process, and the reason why I truly believe I can save time for people that work with me, is I have a template that is one pager that they fill out. Basically, it looks like a form, but it's just a Google Doc, really. And they fill out questions like, who is the target audience for this, you know, in one sentence, what is their main pain point? Like, what is the key pain point that we're solving? What part of the customer journey are they in? Are they not even aware of it, or are they, or of the problem or of the product, or are they ready to buy? What is the target keyword? Who are we, you know, competing against for this target keyword? What do we like and dislike about what's already ranking? What do we think we can do better? Is there, you know, a specific CTA that we want to lead people to? Like, that, those are all very specific elements of each blog post. And it sounds like a lot of work, because it is, but because I do that, we can later on, you know, tweak the post better, easier, faster. It can perform better because straight out of the gate, I knew what is the call to action that we are, you know, aiming to, you know, gain traction to and traffic to. So it is, for me, it is that approach that you cannot just, you shouldn't do things just for the sake of ranking. Like, if you rank and no one gives a crap about it, like, have you really done anything? Like, have you done any good for that person, for your industry, for that specific keyword? Like, does that make sense? Am I explaining it in a way that makes sense?
Yeah, no, this, I mean, I feel like this approach is very like user intent driven, right? So you're creating something that does the best possible job of answering the questions that real people actually have, versus say, like, you know, how do we game the system and just, you know, rank for this keyword phrase and drive a ton of traffic? Like, that's not.
Yeah, what like 100
should be
100%, because, you know, you want to rank, but does ranking for that specific keyword make sense? Will people be in the position to buy? When, you know, are they in a position to buy when they Google that? You know, if someone Googles, I don't know, email marketing software comparison, they're probably already aware that they need email marketing software, and they're looking right for specifics and features and what are the differences and why should they be willing to pay more or this and that? And then you can, you know, create content very specific to that. But if someone Googles, you know, email marketing best practices, they might be looking for something completely different. They might be either very early in the kind of the buying process, or they might be already using email marketing software that they're not 100% sure how to make the most of. So it's kind of diving into, why is anyone Googling this? What is the search intent behind it? And also, if they're looking for this, what other things could they be looking for as well? So how can we make this reading experience and experience of consuming this blog post better by including more, and by, you know, really giving this person what they need, even maybe if they didn't know they need it. So kind of reading into, people also ask on the Google, it's on Google search, it's the thing that shows up sometimes in the middle, when you have the populated questions that you can click on. And then also at the very bottom, searches related. It's the two places where I will go to see what are the actual related questions or search terms that people have actually physically typed in, so that I can include answers to those questions as well if they are closely related to what I'm already writing about, that kind of stuff.
That's a great tip. And I think that's something I also try and do in all my posts, is especially the really like long form guides, is that I'll even have a section at the end that I call, you know, frequently asked questions or people also ask. And then
literally,
all those suggestions that Google's already telling me that people ask. So yeah, that's a smart way to get out ahead of it.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, obviously everyone has their own theory about how Google treats content, and there's a lot going on. You know, it keeps changing and the experts keep chiming in and this and that and whatever. But at the end of the day, Google is going to reward, you know, whoever gives the most complete answer to a specific issue. And the most, I think Brian Dean of Backlinko very recently, like in the last month or so, he sent out an email to his subscribers, which I read at that point, where Google is looking, it seems like Google is looking for the most complete answer, and the most complete answer or article or blog post or whatever you want to call it is the one that tackles all of these related searches and questions. And also, one of the things he mentioned was, if you type in your target keyword and then go on images, there's that little area just above the results that shows, like, not related terms, but terms that are kind of included into your search term. So if you Google, I don't know, email marketing software, it might include things like images, embed videos, like other things within email marketing, like segmenting and things like that, that you might want to include because Google seems to kind of reveal those in image search. I know it sounds really random, especially for like email marketing. That's the example that I had in my head. I know
exactly what you're talking about. It's
but you know, Brian Dean seems to test a lot of stuff and it works. So, you know, if he says it works, I take it. I take it 100%, you know, try it and see if it works. But, you know, people who are so deep in the trenches and come up with these suggestions, I say, let's give it a go. So looking for these related and very closely tied in terms and questions and issues that people might be having with a specific topic, I think is a great way to go deep and really, really know that you are hitting all the points that someone will be looking for.
I love it. All right. Well, Mariana, I've got one last question for you. What would be your number one piece of advice to our audience here today that wants to build a profitable freelance business of their own? What should their number one focus be?
Okay. I could say a lot. I'm going to say try and not do too many things at once. And like, it's a kind of a concept of essentialism, which I'm all about lately. I realize now that early on, I was trying a lot of things and getting overwhelmed. I should be on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. And I have a podcast, like it's not active. You were on it. I have a podcast because I felt like that's a really good way to connect with people. And I did a lot of things like that. And the reason the podcast isn't there right now is I got overwhelmed. I didn't have, you know, that time in my week to keep creating it in a way that I was happy with. So my suggestion is, you know, do one thing at a time or like try a couple of things, but then strip it back down to one. And when I say that, I mean, you know, try five different ways of getting clients, like five different job boards or cold email styles or whatever. But then once you find one or two that work, remove all the others. Then do the same with, you know, the industries you want to work in. Like I'm in pretty much all of my clients are software as a service that focus on marketing or e-commerce. At this point, it's pretty much limited to that. But I did, you know, worked with smaller businesses than the ones I work with. I worked with bigger businesses. I worked with Microsoft at some point through an agency. And it was this huge thing. And I was so happy to do it, but it drained me. So I saw that that's not for me. And I'm not pursuing, you know, Fortune 100 companies anymore. And you have to kind of try a lot of things to go back down to just one or two that work. So my tip is do try a few, but track them, you know, have a spreadsheet or a Google Doc or a piece of paper or whatever, and track what you're doing in every aspect of your business. So whether it's, you know, cold outreach and getting clients, whether it's marketing, whether it's creating your own content, try a few, try five, six, whatever. And then once you find a few that work or one that works in each of them, including, you know, the industry you're targeting and the size of the companies you're working with, get rid of the others and focus your energy on what you do best and do less of what you do, but do it better because, you know, it took me a while to get there. It took me a while to realize, wow, I don't really have to be doing all of this. I'm only good at like 30% of it. So I might as well focus on just those 30% and make it 100%. So I think that it's a very complex piece of advice, but I think early on, everyone gets kind of pulled into, I have to do everything and be everywhere and try all the things and, you know, kind of like spread yourself too thin. That's okay for a while, but you know, you'll burn out. I burnt out. Almost everyone I know burnt out at some point in their career. So
I think it's a good
approach to consider how that affects you and your, you know, physical and mental health and the way you close the laptop at the end of the day and how happy you are in the next day to come back to your job and to go back to everything that's waiting once you open it again. So yeah, I think that's a good way to look after yourself, if that makes sense.
That's perfect. I think that's awesome. A great place to wrap up. Well, Mariana, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening where they can go to learn more about you and everything that you're up to?
Absolutely. My name is spelled a little bit weird, but you know, the podcast title is going to have my name in it. So it's my name, MarianaK.com is my website and my blog and my podcast is there. And then I am pretty much always on Twitter, which is just Mariana K as well. So yeah, I love talking to people and connecting and, you know, making real actual connections online. So that's my jam. So I want to talk to people. Yeah, come say hi.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.